Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and we are back for another episode of Paranormal Horizons. I, as always, am Jason Ophir, here with Sherry Payne this evening. Sherry, how's it going?
Pretty good. How are you doing, Jason?
Not too bad. Hey, did you hear that Art Bell passed away?
Yeah, I saw that right away. Exactly. Wow, that was sudden. That's quite interesting. As a psychic medium, I'm thinking maybe he had a heart attack. That's what it feels like anyway.
Yeah, I don't know, but, you know, he's been a mainstay in the paranormal hosting, or at least back in the day, hosting Coast to Coast. I don't know, was he still hosting Coast to Coast? I thought so. No, because George Norrie took it over. Didn't he initially host Coast to Coast for a long time?
Yes, he was the founder, actually, I think. He's the creator, or the guy that just started it before George Norrie took over. That is correct. He's the father of Coast to Coast AM.
Wow. Well, he was a great man in the world of paranormal, and his show was just a fantastic show, and we learned so much over the years from Mr. Art Bell, so it'll be sad to see him go. What else has been going on in your life this last week?
Nothing much. I mean, just kind of doing readings and just I've really been taking it really low. I mean, I'm at a phase in my life where I'm just turning really reclusive. I mean, it's interesting how I can, you know, be in the public eye and being around a lot of people, but, you know, I'm just like right now, I'm just kind of turning inward and just really kind of, you know, more of a consciousness self-evolvement evolution, you know, being able to vibrate on a higher level and commune with the natives in my land. So, yeah, that's where I've been, is just being able to fine-tune, you know, my clairaudiency and everything else. So that's where I'm at. I love being alone and I like the people, but it seems like right now I'm at that point where I just really enjoy just being more solitude for now anyway.
Well, a little solitude is nice. And, you know, I've been busy, as always, working in a hospital. It's been very enlightening. So let me just say that, because I see so many sick people, that if you have good health, feel blessed, because there are a lot of sick people out there, and it's really kind of astonishing to see and sad to see people that are so sick. So that's pretty much been my life the last couple of weeks, is working in a different hospital, but not much going on. I haven't really been keeping my finger on the pulse of the paranormal. I just happened to see that Art Bell passed away, so it's sad to hear that. But you also got us a great guest this evening.
Yes, and our first time, I saw the guy speak in the Oregon Ghost Conference, and I was very impressed. I mean, he talked about elementals and versus demonology, elementals and demons, and I was very, very impressed with his speaking thing. And so I introduced myself and talked, and pretty soon he's on my our show. So anyway, yes, James Tyson. I want to tell everybody and kind of keep an eye. He's going to be with George Norrie this coming Friday. He's going to be on a UFO panel, roundtable panel, with a very, very well-known guest, Travis Walton, and yada, yada, yada. So you guys listened on the 21st, which is Saturday. And, yeah, he'll be on there too. So I'm excited to hear and see what they have to say and that kind of thing. But really quickly, James is a paranormal investigator. He's also an intuitive and empath, and he's retired from the Royal Canadian Mounted Police after 28 years. He knows a lot. I just feel like he's an old soul, and I like to bring him on because he can share not only his wealth and his wisdom, but also his experience. So let's put him on.
All righty. James,
hey,
how's it going?
Hello, everyone. Good.
Hey.
I've got to correct you, Sherry. I am not on the panel. I am just hanging. I am hanging out with the panel. I'm interviewing Travis Walton.
I'm with the panel. Okay.
Well, I'm with him out of the venue. Interviewing Travis Walton and Dr. Lynn Kitai, who of course wrote the book on the Phoenix Light, who was a witness. The Phoenix Lights, and our friend John D'Souza, ex-FBI agent, probably will may even see him tomorrow, Kim Downs. But, yeah, I'm not on the
you're hearing him cutting in and out?
Yeah, it's kind of like a fading in and out. I don't know if that's an internet thing or not.
Ooh, alien thing.
Yeah,
Mercury still retrograding.
Aliens. I always blame aliens. It's
blame aliens.
But I think I can hear you. It's like the audio's kind of getting louder and not. But we should be all right. We can get through it.
Okay, if you missed something, feel free to jump in and ask me. I'm contacting you via the Skype gods, and we'll see how that works out.
Well, I know Skype has not always – I'm on Skype right now, too, and I know from experience sometimes it gives me issues as well. But that's okay. We'll work through it. So, James, Sherry kind of gave you a little bit of an intro, and I was hoping maybe we could start off with telling us and our listeners a little bit about yourself, a little expanded version.
I was born at a very young age, small town in Ben. I had been seeing things since I was very, very young. One of the more, regular kind of occurrence, shadow in the bedroom that you think is your sister, if you have a sister, standing at the foot of your bed and walking towards you. And that I recall one of the times specifically because I reached my hand out thinking it was this and just went right into the shadow. And then I had this wonderful sleep after that. Went right out. And the next day, I told my mom and my mother, and she said, "Oh, that happened. Like, don't worry about it. It happens all the time." So I never did. Yeah. Oh. And when I was 16, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Yeah, when I was 16 years old, I was in a really bad car accident. April Fool, around noon. I was driving a old beater of a car and at an uncontrolled intersection with a big hedge on my left-hand side. And unfortunately, that hedge was on the right-hand side of this fellow coming left, and we met mid intersection. Unfortunately, his car wrapped right around the front end of my old Ford and spun out of control. I got out of my car, looked around, and went up to a house to the left. Went up the steps, and I remember standing on her steps just before I would knock on the door, and it was a screen door with a wooden door. She opened the wooden door, looked out, screamed, opened the screen door, went running right through my left shoulder. She didn't see me. I looked at her. I looked back at the accident. And I could see myself standing over by my car. And I thought, oh, this is kind of an awkward thing. Aren't I supposed to audio over there? And eventually, everything kind of snapped back, and I was back in the car. And there were four of us in my car. Five of us. Back in the day, it was a coastal area. We were heading down to the docks. The boat or the car was filled with life jackets. We just buffered around on these life jackets. Someone was really hurt. And they put me in the front of the passenger side of the ambulance, anyway. And they loaded the driver of the other car into the back and one of the cars and headed off to the ambulance, to the hospital. We got to the hospital and the nurses and everyone ran over to the back of the ambulance and opened the doors and helped the driver of the other car who was shaken up, walking him away. His son was with him, maybe 5-6 years old, kind of looking around.
Wow.
And I told my parents that after. Yeah, because that son, that young boy that I saw, but I described him completely. He was with his dad. I saw him. And it wasn't that long ago that I actually went back and pulled his death record. Because I've always, I could describe him as day. He was walking with his dad. And just a full-on, like, he was a solid human being. and I remember so on. I work as a policeman and go to car accidents. See things, hear things. You know, you see, you pull up on an accident scene, and there's a witness standing beside the car looking in, and you pull up and make sure it's clear behind you, you've got your emergency lights on, and you get out of the car after telling dispatch where you are.
Yeah, you're going in and out.
And I don't think it's the internet. What it sounds like to me is a microphone issue. Because you're is there an alternative number that you can call in on?
I can try. Or is this mic better now? No? Not good. Okay.
It's hard to explain.
Yeah, if it's I just moved it over in front of my mouth more.
Okay.
So I will. I can give you a call.
Yeah,
on
call
a
that.
Cell phone.
See, it's hard to understand what you're talking about. You're in and out.
Oh, all right. We'll have to
it
start
happens.
All over again.
No worries. Okay. Do you have our call-in number?
Okay. I'm calling now. Okay.
All right, awesome.
Talk to you in a minute.
Okay.
Okay.
That's the problem with technology. You know, we've had so many problems on this show with Skype and everything else.
Yeah,
you know,
sometimes you're just like, wow, it's really frustrating because you want to get on and it's just sometimes it could be very, very difficult. So, but technology,
like,
sometimes we could use without, but also it could be frustrating at times. So hopefully we'll
absolutely.
Have a better connection and everything. I just got bits and okay.
Oh, yeah. James has called back in, so let's bring him right back on.
Yay.
James.
Okay.
Yay. I'm back.
Okay.
Hopefully
okay.
this is better.
That's better.
Yeah.
You know,
so if you didn't hear much, I was talking about the car accident. The first full-on solid apparition I saw was in a car accident when I was a little kid. So, or
wow.
16. And from there, I went off being a policeman and was saying that, you know, the times you pull up beside up to a really bad car accident, and as you're calling this dispatcher and getting out of the car and setting up everything, and you look up and you see the witness there and walk up to the car and then realize that you can't find the witness, but oddly enough, the witness looks identical to the deceased person in the car. So those kind of things where you... not really sure what you saw, like, what, well, how could the deceased person be the one who was standing beside the car as I first pulled up? Just little interesting
things. So that's
things.
That's kind of what directed you towards the paranormal, was those experiences?
No, not at all.
Oh.
In 2012, I met a person I'd gone to school with, and she asked me if I ever gone to a psychic, and I said, no, I'm not really into that stuff. And anyway, she introduced me to a psychic. She had a number of them working out of where she worked at a metaphysical shop, and I had a connection with one of them who I went in, and she actually talked about my mother standing over my left shoulder and described her perfectly. And then knew her name was Lexa, L-E-X-A, which was absolutely amazing because you can't pull that out of a hat. Went on to describe three major incidents in my life that led to post-traumatic stress, and then described how everything was going to turn out in my best interest. She then told me I was something called an empath, and I had no idea what that was, and that I could read cards just like she could. And by this time, I'm believing everything she says because, you know, how the heck did she get my mom's name? All she knew me as... my first name, she had no idea. There was no connection. Even the girl that I knew from when I was a kid, there was no way she would have known my mom's name, my mother's name. So that was odd. And sure enough, within 3 months, I was reading Oracle cards. Jen Nash, who was the psychic, she got me onto a paranormal investigative team. In the second investigation I was on with them, I was having a conversation with a disembodied female across a desk or a table from me in a restaurant, while the other fellow was in another part of the restaurant taking pictures of a a residual energy of a guy pushing a little hand truck out of what is now the office for the restaurant, but back in the day it was a sheet metal company. And I said, you're going to have to get yourself another skeptic because I'm kind of screwed here. And then from there, I just kept going. I did a bunch of work with them and left them and a few, and then joined a few other groups. I'm just one big question. I'm just ever since the experiences that I had as a kid and combined with what I found is this whole empath thing and actually seeing and speaking to people that are dead. It's just all it is to me. It's just one big mystery, and I'm just too much of a kind of an investigator to let it lie. So I'm off doing that, and from that I got hooked up to a 4 years of internet radio show, spaced out weekend, and I kind of brought in some psychics. I had every second Sunday was two mediums and a large, and we would have phone calls, people would call in, have readings. And I left there in July of last year, and I was asked to do a podcast, and that is why I'm out doing interviews here in Arizona. And that's
so
a short.
I was really impressed, James, with your event that you spoke about between demons and elementals. And you know, would you tell listeners a little bit about that? What is the difference between elementals and demons?
Nothing. No, I'm kidding. The talk was basically elementals versus demons was really an idea that we as humans just have this crazy need to put things into boxes. We have to put a label on something, and we really need to classify and document, and that way we're comfortable with things. Well, unfortunately, that is also screened by our upbringings and our belief systems. So one person's elemental is another person's demon. And during the talk, I had a couple of examples. Going through basically what these things are, and I know your listener probably has a great idea of what the basic, the old Paracelsus in 1500s, he coined elemental beings as a mythic being, as it described in occult and alchemical works from around the time of the European Renaissance. And he described them in his Philosophy Magna. He called them the Sagani. The Sagani are basically made up of the sylph, which are beings of the air. And that's like you and I. And what that means is that we move through the air. That is our medium. That's our environment. We can move through it. When I walk down the street, I'm actually walking through air. The salamander were beings of fire. They exist in the flame, and they cannot exist out of the flame. The gnome, beings of the earth. So traditionally, they live in the soil itself, and that is their medium of movement. And the undine, or beings of water, they moved in the water. And, you know, we're allegedly not supposed to be able to move in each other's environments. Well, if you had a fire suit on, you could walk through a burning fire. If you're like scuba dive, you can certainly go through the water. But, you know, a fish out of water eventually will die. And we're in the water too long, eventually we're going to die. But that was their belief system, because people had been seeing things, which eventually were called gnomes, and they'd seen things in the water, beings in the water. And again, only some people saw them. And back, if we go back 1500s and even to earlier, 1,000 years earlier, they were more common because we hadn't polluted ourselves with those bricks that even empaths put up in front of them nowadays, where we may have seen ghosts when we were younger, or we had visit, you know, we heard voices. You saw your grandmother standing at the foot of the bed. We ended up putting bricks up and it builds a wall. And those bricks are made out of religion and science. And we also put them up when no one else in our house sees them. So and when you get to grade school and none of your friends have that issue, it's better not to bring it up anymore. See what I'm saying?
So are these elementals, so they surround us and we're just not aware of them?
Yes, they've been here before we were. I've talked to some psychics who have communications with them. Skeeter Wellhouse out of Maple Valley, Washington, we were doing a clearing of a house, some ghosts out of it for a documentary, and it was an elemental being just running higgly-piggly around the outside of the house. So it was driving us nuts, or her crazy. She put it in a bit of a timeout, kind of caged it in out in the bush. The only reason it was acting up was eventually in the next little while, that whole forest area was going to be raised to build townhouses. So it's been there for thousands and thousands of years. It exists to kind of look after the forest, and humans are about to rip the forest apart, which was funny at the time. Well, funny, but at the time, those of us who wanted to get to this house, we put the address in the GPS, and everyone who put the address in the GPS got lost. You know, the people who basically drove there on a map, a paper map, got there. And we didn't say much, those of us who got lost, until the owner of the house said, yeah, we can't get people here on a GPS. They're always a mile or two away. And we found out it was that elemental being that was responsible for keeping people away. The realtors and the builders and the surveyors, originally they would punch the address in and not make it there. So it's going to be interesting on if they're going to be using electric equipment, like the surveyors doing survey and things like that, how much of a challenge they may have relying on the numbers that they're getting from their different devices. So we have some work to do on that. But that's an example of an elemental being. And go ahead.
Are these elementals primarily benevolent, or can they, say if you have a forest elemental and you're cutting down the forest, can they become malevolent? Can they be unhappy?
Oh, you pretty much so. They are talking, and then I'm going to jump ahead a bit here. I was going to bring his name up a bit later, but a buddy of mine, Jason B. Love, he's a practicing demonologist and occult investigator out in Glasgow, Scotland. I was talking to him at the Gettysburg Paranormal Conference in 2017, and he basically says 95% of the demons he encounters, and these are people when they call up saying there's a demon here and I've got to get rid of it, they're just cranky human ghosts, and the other 5% are elemental beings. So the Old Testament fire and brimstone, big Leviathan kind of demons, they exist, but they've got specific duties to do. So, but they're not out there all the time. And speaking to a couple of exorcists, you'll find a lot of those demons are still existing, but they're existing in countries like the Dominican or Haiti, where there are blood rituals and blood sacrificing still. But for North America and Europe, yeah, those demons have kind of, they were literally the New Testament kind of, they stirred up a lot of crap back then. Now,
wow,
A really nice, good guy to talk to is Sean Whittington. Sean is a demonologist. He is a ordained minister in Las Vegas, and he has a divination. And that divination is he can see what he calls demons. And his wife, bless her, can see ghosts, but she can't see those black fuzzy things, and he can't see ghosts. Well, he can actually walk up to a house that has these demons in them, and he can hear them screaming as he walks up because he can't push them out. And he'll look over his shoulder across the street and see a you know, the 20, 30 foot wingspan of a big black bird staring at him from across, and black, weird looking men kind of beings. And they all just stay away from him because he can push them out of a house. And these elementals, they can attach themselves to us humans, and they like to pick on the higher vibration people. And I don't know, Cherry, if you ever run into somebody with an attachment. There's a term, there's a monkey on your back. And for people who can see this, and this is deals with people with addictions, mostly a high vibration person. So somebody who the universe is pumping a lot of energy into, but they're kept as a low vibration because this thing is literally coming out of their back. Looks like a monkey with the face of a cat and red eyes. And that face is on top of the head of the person, kind of looking over the head of the person they're attached to. And unless you were to get that being removed, that person is never going to successfully kick that addiction. And that being is just feeding off the energy.
So, and that's more commonly elementals versus demons. I think that's
my
understanding.
Demons, yeah. And the demon, if an elemental being, if you were to have an exorcism, let's say, you know, using holy water, invoking, depending on what your religious background, any of the ascended masters from Christ to whoever, they'll back off. They don't like it, but they'll take off. And and of course, this isn't my theory. This is me interviewing for 4 years people who deal with them. An example of, again, demons versus elementals and our need to classify them, put these things. There is a demon. It was a Russian demon, because every culture has demons. It's Lechites. The Lechites were Russian demons, and they lived in the woods. They had human bodies, and they had like the head of a goat with you know, the big horns and the whole bit, and they were kind of a goat from the waist down. And they were said to grow very, very large, like as big as a tree, or even just, you know, maybe 3 or 4 feet high. And they lived in caves, and they were supposed to carry wanderers and carry them off to the caves. And they would tickle them to death. Well, that was a demon in Russia, which is kind of interesting because there was also a satyr in the woods in Germany. And the satyr described identically the head of a goat, the legs of a goat, and body of a man. But he was described as an elemental being. So really, is where are we supposed to kind of draw the line between the two? The satyr, in Greek mythology and into the German history, he was at classical times closely associated with the god Dionysus. And he had Italian counterparts, like fauns and satyrs and Pan and all those guys. But he wasn't a bad guy. He just kind of he was just in the forest. But again, what's your religious background? What's your idea of these things that aren't human when they come out? One person's demon is another person's elemental being, or and the one of the classic versions is the owl, just the regular owl. Elemental being wise, an owl represents wisdom, mystery, transition. It's a carrier of messages, whether some of them are good or they're messages of doom, mysticism, secrets, even coming with intelligence, the wise owl or protection. Well, there's an elemental being that is, it's called a Stolas. And it's a great prince appearing in the form of a night raven. Now, I'm going to quote what they would talk about these night ravens. Night ravens were basically any bird that flew at night. but they were drawn as a long-legged owl. And he would show up. If you had an exorcism of one of these things around, clearing it out of your house, it would show up in the shape of a man. And what he did is he taught astronomy and the absolute understanding of the specialty and the virtues of herbs and precious stones. And and they say they're under that demon. There were 26 legions of other, you know, beings that did his, or sub demons that did his dirty work of what? Teaching astronomy and the virtues of herbs. So again, my God, if we saw one of these big owls and it came to us, back in the late 8 or 1500s, it's going to be a demon if something bad happens, or if someone, some owl all of a sudden shows up while I'm learning astronomy and I'm doing quite well, it must be a demon. When the elemental owls, it talks about wisdom and bringing messages and mysticism and protection and secrets. So again, it's all about who sees it and where they are in their own head.
I find it fascinating. I mean, demons and elementals, but I'm also kind of skeptical when it comes to everything. But it sounds like these elementals are, from what you're saying, I don't know that I'd want any elementals around me, because it sounds like they're kind of, you know, if they have the ability or also attached to people and can kind of wreak havoc in people's lives, is that correct? I mean, are there really positive ones that really do great things for humanity, or are they?
Not, well, they're just, it would be like your neighbors. You know, they're, you could have a grumpy neighbor or a happy neighbor. That's what they are.
I like that analogy.
But,
so yeah.
They have jobs, and you know, we as humans, we have a different soul than they do. They have a certain, they exist in their plane to do what they have to do. It's fascinating when you talk to people who communicate with elemental beings. They usually don't like them, because the elemental being really doesn't have time for us, because they see us as just a bunch of crazy people who destroy the ground that they live on. Like we break everything, we tear things down. And
that's true.
A friend of mine's got elementals in his house. We removed 3 or 4 ghosts out of his house. One of the ghosts we left in, the original owner of the house, and my friend said, yeah, it's okay, I don't mind. He also has Native American, or Canadian would be First Nations or Indians from about 100 years ago. A woman and her daughter walked through his house, and all the neighbors see them as they walk down this hill. They cut through their houses. They're probably just residual energy on an old trail. But a number of people see them. But I was told through the psychic, she said, yeah, you've got elemental beings. That scratching noise you hear in the tops of the walls. You know, you have no rats in the walls or anything. Don't worry about that. They're just elemental beings that live there. And they lived on that spot for 1,000 years before that house was built. And you can get them out. It's just a pain in the butt to get them out. Oh, psychically.
So,
I don't know how to do it. She does it.
So if somebody has paranormal activity going in their house, and they're wondering whether or not they have, you know, a human spirit, a demon, or an elemental, how does one differentiate as an investigator to determine what exactly is going on? What kind of spirit are we dealing with?
Well, most of the time, we're 90% of the time or more, so it's going to be human, because there's a lot more of them around. Like John Love says, you know, 95% of his demons are all human ghosts that were idiots when they were alive, and they're still idiots when they're dead. They're not the nice kind of the ghost, the granny ghost rocking in a rocking chair upstairs. They're just ghosts that don't like you in their space and get a little bit cranky and start moving stuff around, or they will appear to you if they can build up enough energy in a form that would scare you. So they'll appear as you know, a big black shadow with red eyes. Elemental beings will could look like what we think the devil is. You know, they have horns and red eyes and a beard. It's not their fault. It's just the way they exist. It's elemental beings. You can use any of the methods that a I guess almost like an exorcist, you get them out, but you get into the higher realm of dealing with things. It's not like you can use Palo Santo wood and tell the elemental beings to get off the porch. They are a low vibration, but they're literally, they'll walk outside and wait till the house clears and go back in, because that's where they live. But as long as you're kind of keeping your vibration up, and like being happy, healthy, and not really like putting an oil rig in the backyard or something like that, they're not going to bug you. They just exist. They are just our neighbors. Have you ever seen, did you ride a motorcycle at all?
Actually, I just sold my Harley, so yes.
Did you have a bell on the Harley?
I actually did, yeah. And the ritual is that somebody had to put it on for me. I wasn't able. And you put it as low to the ground as you can get.
Why?
From what I was told, because I was ignorant to it, it was just kind of the thing when I got my bike was, I thought they said, and it's been a long time, but it wards spirits away.
Yeah, and what they are the elementals. Bells are angelic, and what they're doing, they used to say, well, you know, ever since I had this bell on, I haven't hit a pothole, and I haven't dropped my bike, or, you know, I haven't, you know, for some reason, turned too sharp, and not that those bells will save your life, like, when it's time to go, it's time to go, or when your bike is going to go down, it's going to go down. So what it is that it is supposed to, if it was a legit bell, it was supposed to bring, like, give you the safety of the angels as you drove down a road. And think of roads being built through a forest. Elementals are crossing back and forth, and they don't really give a rat's bottom of you tooling around the motorcycle. And they'll, you know, if they end up knocking you a bit, you get knocked over. But that's what that bell is for.
I didn't know that. That's interesting. Wow.
I don't know anybody that doesn't have a bell, so it kind of makes me giggle a little bit because I, you know, you kind of expanded on what, you know, I was told about it. But like I said, the big thing is that you can't buy the bell and put it on yourself. It has to be somebody else has to buy the bell and they have to put it on your bike. I don't know why that is, but it's got to be a gift.
Like, I believe the old church bells were gifted too. You got a bell given to you by either another church. I can't remember how that worked, but if I was going to build a church and I was ordained as a minister and we were building it, I can't go out and buy a bell. It's gifted to me from another group or another church, or that's how the bell gets there. It's gifted, and you receive the bell, and the bell's angelic.
Well, maybe there is something, to it, because while I did have a lot of, I rode for over 10 years, probably close to 15, and while I did have some close calls, I never really had any major incidents on the motorcycle, and maybe I can chalk that up to being the bell warding off elementals.
Yeah, who knows? Well, you know, we're going to find that out just the way Art Bell found out. You have to pass away. And then after a while, you're going to go, oh, I was so wrong about that. Or, oh, I told you. But we all get the answers. Unfortunately, we don't get them now.
Well, hopefully that's not anytime soon for any of us.
Yeah, that's true. I have a friend of mine who's a psychic who will tell you the time or the date and the cause of your death. Would you be interested?
Oh, wow, that's a tough question. Probably not. Well, if somebody told me that, I would probably just take it with a grain of salt and not really put much credit to it and not worry about it too much, but it would always be in the back of my mind. What about you, Sherry?
I would like to know just to see what people say.
Yeah, no, yeah, you know what? Yeah, I would. Why not?
You have free will. You know, there is a certain point where you do have your destiny, but you also, in a way, have a free will. So, you know, you have to have that balance, I guess.
Yeah, it's been explained to me like a big hallway with doors on each side, like looking down a hallway of a hotel or an apartment building. You come in at one end and you go out the other end, but you have the chance to go through any of those doors at various stages of your life. Which is interesting. One of the things I want to tell you is about the whole demon thing. There is Christian traditional demonology. There's Jewish demonology, Greco-Roman magic, and Western occultism and Renaissance magic, which really, well, the Renaissance magic was amalgamation of. And the Western occultism was an amalgamation of the Greco-Roman magic back in the day. Basically, a demon is a, and this is going back to Aramaic traditions. It includes an ancient or medieval Christian demonology, which is where you really start seeing a lot more demons show up when someone brings up a Bible. A demon is considered an unclean spirit or a fallen angel, and this is the big one, or a spirit of unknown type. So if you couldn't describe or you couldn't put what you saw into a box, if you were a Christian, then it was a demon. And I don't know if you've ever had demonologists on, Sherry, but a lot of them are Roman Catholic or Catholic, and ghosts are demons. Just like my mother's ghost comes and says, you know, everything's going to be okay, have a nice day. Well, that's a demon. So, sorry, Mom, I can't believe you, because you must be a demon because you're telling me to have a good day. And, well, that's just silly. But that's my argument with demonologists, because it's religious based, and I don't shoot down religions.
Mm-hmm.
I just see them as something a little bit different than other people, because it is the eye of the person and their belief system. When they see this thing, you know, some people think Bigfoot is a demon. If Bigfoot exists, it's a demon.
I always wonder if we manifest our own reality. So like you said, if we have a past in a certain religion, you know, say Christianity or whatever, Catholicism, that we manifest demons. And I kind of believe that since we believe in those things, we kind of create it maybe on some spiritual or level to where it only exists because we believe it. Basically, we're manifesting our own realities.
Yeah. Who knows? I don't know. It's I did have a past life regression, and during my past life regression, I certainly said a lot of things that there was no way in this life I would ever know. And when I researched it, it was sure enough, it all existed. So it wasn't something, even like going back into a past life or one of the other woo-woo kind of things. To me, I know it couldn't have been something I self-manifested, because I saw things that I did not know or could never have known in the life that I'm in right now. Unless I was, I'd have to be raised in Europe. So no matter how good I was at geography and history and things like that, there's no way I could know the road systems or where the city was and the uniform that I was wearing. It was completely alien to me.
James, can I ask you, you know, since you have a different take on demons and elementals, what is your take on people? Can they hop on you, and you can they be transferred from one person to another? How can you protect yourself from having them just be close to you? I mean, if you can perform a ritual to get rid of them, that's one thing, but how do you prevent, you as a paranormal investigator, what steps do you take to protect yourself, and how do you prevent them from hopping from one person to another person, let alone a location?
I believe that it's just like preparing yourself to go on any paranormal investigation. You kind of clear yourself. Some people have a prayer, some people have meditation, which honestly I believe is the same thing. You're asking a higher being to look after you, and clean yourself when you leave. And I do meditations. You and I are, Sherry, I can look at you, and there's a feeling you get when you think, oh, I've known this person for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that is how I can look at somebody and go, oh, they're another empath. Because I'm just overly, like I know them, they're comfortable. And that's a higher vibration person. Elemental beings love, absolutely love somebody in a really low point in their life. Like an addiction, a really severe illness. And if you are a higher vibration human, through no fault of your own, may have been sexually abused, mentally, physically abused as a child, grow up trying to repress that memory with alcohol or drugs, that is, you are, you know, a choice target for some elemental beings. Not all of them, but these some that will literally come into you and keep you pushed down, keep you in that low vibration, because the universe is continually feeding you, because you are a higher vibration person, but the elementals intercepting that. So to truly get somebody out of
boy,
that addiction, you have to clear that.
And there sure is an epidemic of substance abuse and mental illness. It seems like humanity in general is going downhill. So I would imagine there's a lot of available picking out there for the elementals to latch onto.
There is. And they also don't want us, you know, if the higher vibration humanity gets into, and you talked about star seeds and indigos and things like that. There used to be the old statistic that I was told, empaths were 5% of the population was empath, 65 to 68% were women. But it seems, I had no idea I was an empath until 2012. Then I had this huge awakening, and I'm seeing more things, and I'm listening to more things, and I'm just trying to absorb all what from other people around me, and I'm seeing more. I now see empaths. I can see them. And a friend of mine who's a psychic, Skeeter, she said, you're going to get asked questions sometimes, and the only answer you have is going to be, I just know. And it's really weird, because I'll look at somebody and we'd be talking and they say, how did you know I was this and that? And I just have to kind of grin and say, I just know, because I can't figure it out. I just know. And sure, you'll probably get that as a psychic, as a medium, that there are things that sometimes you are just given. And you don't
know
where
it comes. Absolutely. So, being claircognizant. You just know.
Yeah, and it's whether that person takes it or not. It's we are like that, but there's a shift coming, and that's a whole other show. And people are awakening and have been awakening for maybe 10 to 15 years now. And there's a reason for that. And those people who are awakening are higher vibration. And it's kind of funny. You could think, I don't believe this, and I don't believe in this higher vibration or lower vibration. The people listening to your show are like, that's why they don't know why they were drawn to this. They like the subjects. They like, it's interesting. They have their own comments. They're in the chat rooms, like battling back and forth. They're all high vibration people, or else they wouldn't be here. if they were very low vibration people, they'd be sitting on the couch with their brain turned off, eating a bag of chips. Here, they're listening to you sitting on the couch with a bag of chips. But it's a different. they're accessing, their thought patterns are changing. They're thinking about things. They're arguing. A really good thing is to argue what I am saying, and go out and talk to a bunch of other people who have different opinions. It's all this is this isn't my opinion based on, you know, 50 years of university study or something. I just ask a bunch of psychics who claim they see these furry little beasts or talk to aliens, or and I interview them. Unfortunately, sometimes I'll interview them like I'm a police doing a police interview, and I think the last time I did that was interviewing Tom Gimlin, or Bob Gimlin, who was with Patterson doing the Patterson Gimlin film of the Bigfoot in Northern California 50 years ago. It was a nice conversation, but I went through a whole bunch of interview interrogation tricks to try to determine if he was accessing the side of his brain where you make up stuff, like the artistic side, or the file cabinet side. And of course, if you told the same story, even if it was fictitious, for 50 years, it comes from your memory side. So you take a little piece of that story and you amplify it, and then you take a little piece of the amplification, and you narrow, and you kind of dig down into, and ask a question that is so obscure, you make the guy think. And that, you watch him, and you can tell when they pull it from their memory side. And I did maybe half a dozen or eight questions like that with Bob, and he pulled it all from memory. So I have no doubt that he saw Bigfoot, and it wasn't a hoax. So, well, that's kind of the way I do it. But and you know, same with anybody who says they saw a giant or a thunderbird or something like that. They could have definitely seen them, but I don't know. So tell me what you saw, because I'm really, this is very interesting to me. And I can't say someone didn't see something, because that's not my place. I can just say, oh, you saw that? That's why I'm bringing back the podcast. It's just going to be a hoot, and traveling around interviewing people and videotaping the interviews and having them up for the audience to look at and make their own minds up based on the information they're getting.
We're all searching for answers.
There's a really cool kid, Akiani Kramerik, who painted a picture called The Prince of Peace. She painted this picture at the age of 8. She is a binary genius, a genius in oil painting and poetry. She's about 23, 24 now. She said at the age of 4, living in a being homeschooled with no television and no radios and with atheist parents, she woke up one morning and said, "Mom, Jesus came and took me up into space, and I looked at the Earth from a different angle." And her mom's like, "What?" And about 4 years later, she painted a picture of this Jesus, and it's, if you know, Google The Prince of Peace. It's amazing. Her oil painting from the ages of, like, I think age of 6 or 7 up until now are some of the most beautiful paintings you can see. She's actually got paintings of our universe that you'd have to be, the point of view is in space. And she painted those when she was 9 or 10. And it's absolutely incredible. But when I talked to her, I actually asked her, I know we're running out of time, we'll do this really quick. She was talking about going into space and seeing light, and she's still relatively protected. And I said, so you've seen light beings? And she described them like cats and things, which is what a lot of people do when they describe seeing light beings. And I said, wow, that's interesting. And she wasn't familiar with that at all. And I said, have you ever lost any time? And she hesitated and said, oh, yeah. It was once I was missing for 10 hours. I went to lay down, and then I woke up. It was 10 hours later, and the police were in my house. I walked out of my bedroom and I said, where have you been? And she said, I was just laying down. And I said, no, you weren't. they had the FBI, because she was a really well-known painter at the time, making lots of money and for the family, and she disappeared. So the FBI and everybody were involved and said, no, you weren't in your bedroom, and it's been 10 hours. So she's now, and of course she was always on, she was on the Oprah show and Good Morning America and things like this, but they would just talk to her about Jesus and things, but I kind of went sideways and talked to her about aliens. And but those are the kind of questions that I have for people, because I'm too curious to let it go.
I'm with you on that. Anytime I hear about missing time, I'm like, okay, alien abduction.
Well, yeah. You know, missing time, missing. Alien abduction,
yeah.
Or tequila. It's one of the two, always.
Oh, my gosh.
Or both.
Or both. So tomorrow I'm heading down to Tucson and then out to Tombstone to interview Nora, who's with the Paranormal Sisters in Tombstone, and she looks after the old morgue down there, which is haunted as heck. I'm going to have another talk with her, poke my nose around Tombstone for a day or two, and then back up to Sedona on the 20th. Travis Walton's going to be in Sedona with the kind of another spiritual retreat up there on the 20th before he comes down to Scottsdale with the George Norrie's panel on the 21st, which is the 10th anniversary of, I think, was it the last big Phoenix Lights parade of UFOs.
Well, James, yeah, we're out of time, so I want to give you an opportunity to, how can people learn more about you? Website or Facebook page, if they maybe want to contact you, if they have any questions or.
Yeah,
like that.
My Facebook page is James Tyson. There's also a Facebook page, and if you can write this down, it's called The Oracles with James Tyson. The Oracles with James Tyson. Friend me on Facebook, James Tyson. Go to James Tyson Media on Instagram. And the website should be up shortly, and it'll be James Tyson, or sorry, as you were, The Oracles with James Tyson, and there'll be contact information on there. We're just figuring out a way right now to add 4K videos to the website.
Ah, very cool. Well, James, I want to thank you for coming on Paranormal Horizons this evening and educating us on elementals and demons. And it's been entertaining. We'll have to get you back on sometime in the future because it's a pretty broad subject, and I'm sure there's a lot more we could have covered.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. And it's kind of interesting. It's something I'm just dipping into now and getting different people's opinions on it. So I want to thank you and Sherry for inviting me on. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you. Thank you for your time. We appreciate you. We'll have you back on, James.
Thank you. And I'm going to bring
Yay.
You guys on, probably kicking and screaming.
Thank you for your time.
Oh, anytime.
Be safe and enjoy yourself.
I will. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Hey, excellent guest.
I didn't know much about elementals, and it's very interesting. And you know, it expands our knowledge when we start touching on subjects we don't normally talk about or don't. Subjects that we don't talk about often, and it's very enlightening.
Yes, it is very much so. It's a way for us to grow and share and learn, and just it's great. I love it. It's wonderful. Hey, next week, I just want to do a real quick rundown. Next week, our guest will be Brian Roulette. He's a regular guest on Ghost Adventures with Zach Bagan. So. Love to have him back. He's, like I said, he's a wealth of information. He is an exorcist, and just love having him back and just sharing the world, everything he knows, and it's just a very good perspective, and, you know, he just is wonderful. So, anyway, in 2 weeks from now, we're going to have Stan Gordon. So, Stan the man, he's been around for a long, long time, and we're going to talk about the cryptoids. So, yeah, that's going to be interesting, and love to have Stan. So, okay?
Well, it's going to be all you because, unfortunately, I have to work. So, yeah, I got to save lives. You know, no big deal. Do my little part to save lives in 2 weeks.
That's fine. I've done the show by myself before, so that's not a big deal. So, yeah, we'll get together, and, yes, we'll definitely go and continue the show. So I'm really excited, and really quickly, I'm really excited. I got a confirmation with Ross Allison. He's with Haunted Toys. So he just confirmed today he's going to be on our show in July. So, yay!
Awesome. Well, unless you have anything else, Sherry, I guess we can wrap it up. Wish everybody a happy and safe week. We'll see everybody next Sunday, p.m. West Coast time. And if you haven't already, give us a like on Facebook, at Paranormal Horizons on Facebook.
Yes, and thank you guys for all your support. And, yes, thank you. I noticed that the Paranormal Horizons Facebook page is starting to get very engaging. And like I said, this is not necessarily our opinions or our thoughts or our beliefs, but it's very entertaining. It is for entertainment purposes, and we like to share, Jason and I like to share different aspects of the paranormal, the spiritual, and the metaphysical.
Absolutely. So everybody have a safe week, and we'll see you next week, and good night, everyone.
Good night. Take care. Peace.